Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back with another episode of the Celtics Live podcast, where we are gearing up for the NBA draft and for the Tokyo Olympics. Today, we'll discuss a little bit of each. I'm your host, Cameron Tipitapai, alongside Alex Goldberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. The draft is just around the corner, and so we've brought on a special guest to break things down for us. Let's give a warm Celtics Lab welcome to USA Today's Brian Dobrowski. Brian, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me today. I definitely appreciate your time. Big fan of this podcast and love working with Justin, so I'm glad to be here.
Well, we are lucky to have you because anyone who has listened to this podcast knows that Justin, Alex, and I are not necessarily draft aficionados. And Brian, if I can butter your buns, you're one of the best in the biz. I think anyone who's interested in the NBA draft probably has already seen your work. So we're very thankful to have you on.
Appreciate it.
Justin, Alex, how are things in Mexico City? How are things at Somerville?
I dispute your characterization. I do take a very poorly informed interest in the draft, but things are good in Mexico.
Alex?
I'm also going to dispute that as the guy who predicted that Sadiq Bey would be good last year for any fellow listeners who might be interested in that. But I'm doing okay. Things are fine in Somerville. I'm going to go out to the courts a little bit later and get some shots up. Cam, hope to see you there. But if you're not, no worries.
Yeah, this podcast is really just a front for Alex and I to recruit people to our basketball empire in Somerville. But Brian, we won't bore you with that. Brian, we invited you on. The Celtics at present own the number 45 pick in this year's draft, which is Thursday the 29th. And they don't have a first-round pick. Boston doesn't because they dealt it away in the Kemba Walker trade. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, Brian, let's start with this. How likely do you think it is that Boston looks to trade up into the first round at this draft?
I'm not really sure that that's something that would make a lot of sense for their trajectory. Obviously, it's going to be hard for me to predict too much of what the Celtics front office is going to look like now that it's a whole new regime. I don't really know how aggressive Brad Stevens is going to be as a guy working the phones on draft night. I don't know necessarily how much he values the idea of a draft prospect versus ready now talent that's kind of already under contract somewhere else. But I personally don't think that the Celtics are going to be major players in the draft beyond, you know, just kind of presumably taking their pick, you know, in the second round. But, you know, I think that the fact that they traded out of their first rounder is a good indication so far of kind of where we think their timeline looks like in terms of what they're looking for out of the draft compared to their team building via, you know, win now players.
Yeah, I suspect you're right as such. We have in our notes, would they even trade up in the second round? But I suspect that unless there's a player they really have the hots for, that doesn't make sense. And let's shelve that for a second because maybe you know something I don't. But Justin or Alex, from a Celtics perspective, is there a player in this draft that you would think the Celtics should go target? Or do you agree with Brian's read that a ready-made product is probably better?
All of my favorite players in this draft are kind of in the like late to mid lottery range. Mm-hmm. And I think aside from, you know, your obvious top picks like Jalen Green, Kate Cunningham, et cetera. But I think the combination of assets that the Celtics would have to give up to get into that like 15 or 16 pick range, it's probably not really worth it for them to make that deal given the kind of identity that they have been trying to establish this offseason, which is pretty clearly headed in the direction of getting more vets and more experience and building away from the identity of youth that they've really been rocking with for these past few years. So there are a couple of guys that I like for sure, but I just don't think that, I mean, if the Celtics really want to get one of those guys, they almost certainly would have to give up Robert Williams or Marcus Smart to make it happen. And that just doesn't really seem like a deal that Brad Stevens has any interest in making right now.
You basically made my point for me. I do think there is a very tiny chance that if the right deal comes along that will save them some cap space down the road, maybe then they might consider dealing into the first round, but it's very unlikely in my opinion.
And I'll just totally agree because there's no way they're trading into the first round. So Brian, actually, before we hop into the second round where things are actually a little Celtics-centric, let me ask you this. Can you think of a team or two that you do think is going to be aggressive in the draft that might be looking to trade up or trade down or trade out? Have you heard anything? Do you have an inkling? What can you tell us about the first round?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the teams that come to mind are the teams that have a surplus of picks. I think the first team that comes to mind in terms of the biggest mover that I could really see is the Golden State Warriors. I think that I would characterize this as a 4 or 5 person draft.
Sure.
And obviously, like, that line of thinking is what landed to the Brooklyn Nets, you know, not selecting Damian Lillard, that literal exact line of thinking, by giving that pick to you guys, essentially. But I think that the obvious picks for who could help the Warriors on a win now basis don't really align with 7 or 14. I don't think there's an obvious player out of either of those. So I could see either a package up. Scotty Barnes would be the guy I would target for them, although he is probably a little bit younger for their timeline. But in terms of just kind of that model, he's probably the closest player to Draymond Green I've ever seen. I also think there's a more willing shooting version of Ben Simmons with a little bit more intensity, but a lot of the same skill set that Ben Simmons has with defensive versatility, playmaking, ball handling, you know, ability to score well near the basket. I think that Scotty Barnes is somebody who definitely stands out for me as somebody that people might want to trade up for that are not, you know, necessarily traded into the top three, because I do think the top three or four are mostly solidified at this point. But that being said, other teams that kind of come to mind off the jump, New York Knicks, I think, have been a team that makes a lot of sense for me to package some picks and trade up. You know, I think the Pelicans and the Thunder this is going to be a yearly occurrence, have a surplus of picks that they'll either look to package or trade up. Personally, I think that the Pelicans have one of the more attractive packages, in my opinion, for Damian Lillard, if that does get to that point in Portland, just with all the picks that they have. So that's definitely going to be worth monitoring, but I don't foresee a scenario where Damian Lillard is traded in the next, you know, 9 days while he's in Tokyo. Like, that's just not going to happen. That being said, me saying that probably just means it's going to happen. But yeah, New Orleans, I think, with their draft capital, Oklahoma City with their draft capital. One notion that I do want to swat away, though, is any notion of trading Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to move up to try to get Cade Cunningham. Because personally, I think the closest comparison, in my opinion, to Cade Cunningham right now is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. For those who have followed Shai recently, his shot creation, his size, his playmaking are his most attractive qualities, and that aligns very much with Cade. So obviously, I think Cade has an incredibly high ceiling, but I think Shai could be an all-star next season, and I think that they have really similar profiles, and I don't know why you would trade somebody who has the exact same archetype just to get a slightly younger version of a pretty similar product.
Cool. I love that. I love Shai. So that's cool to hear. All right. Let's refocus our attention on the Celtics, but that's exciting. I'm probably not going to watch the second round. Maybe I will, but I'll definitely watch the first round. So I'll keep an eye out for that. So again, the Celtics have the 45th pick, which is not, it's not a thing to sneeze at. I want to read off a few notable 45th picks since the year 2000. Matt Bonner, Lou Williams, Goran Dragic, and then more recently, Dwight Powell, Demetrius Jackson, the Celtics took him, and Dylan Brooks. So there's talent out there. I mean, any pick could, in the right circumstance, the right context, yield some pretty serious results. So, Brian, let me ask you, right off the cuff, who are some players that you think Boston might target with this number 45 pick?
So I think maybe it's because of just my closeness to the interview process. When it comes to interviewing prospects, because that's become a lane that I've really, really carved a niche out for myself over the last couple of years. But I love the guys in the 45 range year after year. Those are usually the guys that give the most thoughtful answers. Those are usually the more polished upperclassmen, win now players. Granted, you could also do a home run swing or a draft and stash swing or whatever it might be in that same range. But you know, there's a lot of guys in that 45 range that tend to, I think, create a ton of good value, at least for me. So I think, you know, some guys that probably pop for me that I've spoken to, Herbert Jones would probably be at the top of the list. I think that he's somebody who is going to be really, really coveted just because of his ability to play within his role. You know, he played 4 years at Alabama. It proved his three-point percentage from 7% as a junior to 37% as a senior. Probably the best defensive wing in this class, or at least up there in that conversation. He's somebody who is kind of a point-forward mentality in that he's, you know, more than happy to pass and make the smart, right play instead of being a get-mine kind of a guy. You know, there's great things about guys like Cam Thomas and Trey Mann who, you know, are great on-ball players, but those kind of players don't necessarily make as much sense for a team like the Celtics, who obviously not only have, you know, a formidable, you know, ball dominant starting lineup as it is, but, you know, also did draft a player like that last year in Peyton Pritchard from my Oregon Ducks. So I think that Herbert is somebody who I would definitely highlight just off the top of my head, because he's not going to necessarily demand the ball as much. He's happy to play off of it, make the right defensive play, and pass. Kind of in that same category would be David Johnson out of Louisville, you know, pass first player who improved his 3-point shooting year over year as well from, you know, below 30% as a freshman to nearly 40 as a sophomore. He was a projected lottery pick coming into the season, but COVID really kind of derailed the Louisville campaign and he ended up kind of slotting closer to that 45 range. I think he'd be a fine value at that point. I don't know if Joe Wieskamp or Quentin Grimes will still be on the board, but you know, any team I think could use shooting help like that. Anybody who followed the combine would see that those two guys just fully broke out. So those are good guys who are mostly just going to be catch and shoot options, but those are guys who I think will bring, you know, a similar profile to what Corey Kispert is going to bring to you in the top 20. So I think realistically, you know, Grimes and Wieskamp would be guys that I'd highlight. And then I would probably also talk about some of the, you know, front court guys like Justin Champagne, or Champagne rather, out of Pitt. He's somebody who I think can, you know, play a smart defensive minded role, get some good boards and, you know, play good spot minutes. He's one of those guys who just brings a good tenacity to the floor. I mean, he got a technical foul during combine scrimmages just from arguing a call. Like, that's the kind of thing that you don't see very often. I think he would probably remind a lot of guys, actually, of, like, a Marcus Morris. And I say that not just because he has a twin brother who also plays basketball at high level, and Julian Champagne. But I do think that they actually have fairly similar profiles in terms of just, you know, that grittiness. He's a Brooklyn guy and just not going to take anything from anyone kind of thing. And those are just off the top of my head a few guys that I think kind of pop off the top of my head, really. I think that there's definitely some other guys who I have liked talking to. I really liked getting to know Austin Reeves, really liked getting to know Luka Garza. Definitely believe in both of their long-term futures. But at this point, I'm kind of rambling.
No, I love that. Alex and Justin want to hop in, but I just want to shout out Pitt. I hope we get this kid. Let's get Justin. Okay.
No, Justin, I want to ask about Luka Garza. Now, I know he's awful in the pick and roll, but why is he ranked so low in these mocks?
Oh, well, so obviously, like, I think a lot of folks think that he could get played off the floor in terms of his pick and roll defense, because teams are just going to attack him as, you know, as a defender. And I think that realistically, that's fair. I think the primary aspect of his scoring in college was out of the post. But frankly, I think that he's going to have a lot of trouble translating a lot of that to the NBA. And he would agree with that too. So, you know, the thing with him is, you know, he had the lowest vertical out of anybody at the combine. He had the worst agility score. His athletic testing was just poor. I mean, I think he's probably going to be a little too slow to guard the fours, a little too short, or a little too whatever it might be to play a real five in the NBA. So I think at this point he projects mostly as a stretch four. And I think, you know, what he was so good at in college was being a post scorer. And while he was a good shooter, you know, I don't know if he's a knockdown guy per se, the same token when he's playing off the ball as much. So I think you're kind of taking away the thing that made him great and putting him into an entirely new role that we don't know him about as much. And so I do actually really think that he's got the right work ethic and the right attitude to make sure that he's able to have a good NBA career. The first answer he gave me when I spoke to him, he cited the exact percentage of how often he posted up in college and how he's taken measures to, you know, cut his body fat and cut his weight to avoid that, you know, moving forward. And I think, you know, anybody who knows the exact frequency of how often he posted up is somebody who I certainly believe in terms of, like, just the way he studies the game and his self-awareness and just knowing that that's not the way the NBA is playing anymore. So I really loved that, and I loved that he knows that it's going to have to change. But I do think that, yeah, when you take away the thing that made you great and put you in something else, it's more of an unknown. And I don't know if we know who Luka Garza, the stretch four, is as much as we know who Luka Garza, the consensus collegiate player of the year, is.
So I have one more guy I wanted to pick your brain about before I put down the proverbial mic. Marcus Zegarowski. Now he's Michael Carter Williams' little brother. He was great in the tournament. I don't understand why he is also mocked so low. He shoots pretty well. He seems like a really good candidate for the NBA.
Yeah, I really like him. You know, scouts I spoke to before the season told me they thought he was a pit bull, just in terms of his ability to make sure that he's on the floor and making a high impact at a high level. I think that Marcus Zegarowski is an NBA player. I think that whether or not a team's going to trust him to be a floor general at the next level is probably the main question mark I have about him, because realistically, you know, how many teams necessarily are willing to give the keys to their offense, either first unit or second unit, to somebody out of Creighton who didn't necessarily light the world on fire during his time in college. But I like Marcus Zegarowski. I think he's got the right mentality. I know that he recently did an interview that I helped arrange with Cody Taylor over at Rookie Wire, and Cody told me that Zegarowski arrived exactly to the minute of what time the interview was scheduled for, and he thought that was awesome. Just seeing, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, show up, maybe show up a few minutes late or whatever, but just to the second, you know, that kind of preciseness I thought was awesome. I really think that Zegarowski is going to be somebody who's going to carve a role for himself. I think that he's definitely somebody who I would want on my team. Honestly, I think that, at least for Boston, though, probably a fairly similar thing to what Peyton Pritchard's role already is. And frankly, Peyton was just better at it during college, more experience at it, you know, in his 4 years at Oregon, and just more prolific as well.
Ryan, one thing that I am noticing about a lot of the teams that have had success in the playoffs this year is that many of them feature a bench stretch five or stretch four who can come in and hit open threes, who can move the ball, and who can at least capably defend on some level. I mean, obviously, there is not, I imagine, a player of Bobby Portis's caliber in the second round of the NBA draft. but that's a player archetype that I'm really looking for as far as Celtics potential second round picks, a person who can come in off the bench and provide a different kind of look than say a Robert Williams or a Tristan Thompson at the five position and allow the Celtics to play small there. Is there anybody that you have your eye on who would fit that description?
Yeah, I think there's a few guys that come to mind. I think that Justin Champagne would be somebody who's not quite that shooter yet, but he's certainly somebody who's not afraid to shoot and his jump shot has shown some promise. So I think that he's somebody who could potentially project that way as he continues his development. Kessler Edwards out of Pepperdine, not a five, but definitely an undersized player, or definitely an undersized front court player. I think he can play the four or the five at the NBA level for those sort of, you know, spot minutes like that. Probably somebody who would be worth watching in that sense. I think he was one of the best defensive players during the combine scrimmages, and has definitely had good shooting numbers in the past. And even though he didn't really fare particularly well in the combine shooting environment, he's somebody who shot 39.5% from three during his 3 years in college. So we've got enough tape on him as a shooter to know that he's somebody who can really, really shoot the ball. And I think at the end of the day, somebody that I really think is worth taking a look at has got to be EJ Onu out of Shawnee State. You know, I think that you don't really hear very often about prospects from the NAIA, but he's somebody who definitely deserves serious consideration as much as anybody in this draft. If you're talking about guys who can defend and shoot the ball, he is, you know, 6'11", averaged 4.6 blocks per game last year and shot 40% from three in leading his team to the national championship at the NAIA level. So while he's somebody who obviously hasn't had the elite competition that most guys have faced, he also is somebody who tested at the G League Elite Camp with a 7'8.5" wingspan. So he's going to come out and immediately have one of the longest wingspans in the NBA, and he's not afraid to shoot the ball either. So he's somebody who I think is way deserving of consideration for somebody who can shoot the ball. I mean, he averaged about, you know, 2.7 threes per game during his 4 years in college, and he's almost 7 feet tall. So he's definitely a stretch big. And I don't know if necessarily we expect to see that translate the same token at the next level. But I do think that he's kind of a home run swing in the second round that I would certainly be interested in taking.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. So I'm just going to round out a few things we have in our notes, and then I'm going to ask everyone to share the one thing on the draft, on draft night, Celtics or not, that they're most excited for. But Miles McBride, who is a guard from WVU, his nickname is Deuce. Conceivably, he could fall to the Celtics, and then there would be two Deuces in the Celtics orbit. And Marcus Sigrowski would be the 46th NBA player from Massachusetts. And that's a fun fact no one ever needed to learn. So let's go around the horn. One thing that you are looking forward to this draft night, Brian, what are you looking forward to most, Celtics or anything else?
I guess just sort of in a self-promotion standpoint, I'd like to see where Nashawn Hyland ends up. He is somebody who I did a feature on for the win here at USA Today. And just really, really fell in love with his story. He's somebody who was the top-rated high school prospect out of Delaware, was watching March Madness when his house burned down. He lost his baby cousin and his grandma in the fire, and he had to jump out of a window where he tore his some significant ligament that limited his basketball season, and, you know, kind of always wanted to play March Madness because of you know, that horrible, horrible incident where he was watching March Madness when that happened. And then, you know, about an hour before the game was set to tip off, the game got canceled and his team had to forfeit due to COVID. So he didn't really get a chance to break out in the way that I think a lot of people probably expected him to. Then he came out in the combine scrimmages and was very clearly the best player out there. So he's somebody who I'm just excited to see where he ends up, because I really just believe in him and believe in his story and believe in his shooting, and think that he's just I've got a real star personality. So he's somebody who I think I'm just most curious to see what happens with Bones.
What's his name again?
His name is Nashawn Hyland, but everybody calls him Bones. He went to and because of how skinny he is, all skin and bones, but he went to Virginia Commonwealth, and I just think that he's a real special guy, really, really special guy. And I think that, you know, some scouts are comparing him to Emmanuel Quickly. I think they look kind of similar. I would say his closest comp, if everything goes well, would be like Jamal Crawford. I think that that's obviously an incredibly, you know, ambitious goal for someone. But I do think that that's the sort of archetype that he fits under.
All right, Nashawn Hyland. I'll have to check that out. And we'll do a whole bunch of plugs at the end. But, yeah, for the win, you can find Brian's work over there. Justin and Alex, who are you most excited for in this draft, or what are you most excited for?
For me, it's always the same thing when it comes to the NBA draft, which is who is getting traded and where and for what. I love the draft specifically because it's one of the hottest trade times in the league. So I'm going to be looking out for Golden State. I'm going to be looking out for the Raptors. I'm going to be looking out for OKC. I'm going to be looking out for all sorts of teams flipping around veteran pieces, draft assets, you name it. I'm going to be following that with some intent.
Playing off of that, similarly for me, for more or less the same reasons, I'm just, you know, looking for some clarity in terms of what the Celtics are going to be doing with their roster building and whether or not this second round pick is going to be used to actually take someone, or whether or not it's going to be kind of a sweetener to move on from, say, Tristan Thompson as a glaring example.
Well, me personally, on draft night, I'm most looking forward to see who wins the Celtics Lab podcast's off-season giveaway. This off-season, we're doing an all-encompassing C-laboration giveaway. That's where we collaborate with Celtics creatives in the community to give away some free swag. So go ahead and head to @CelticsLab on Twitter to check out the t-shirt that you could win this off-season. It's a stylized image of Jaylen Brown dunking over Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's probably an image you're familiar with, but with a little bit of pizzazz. So how's that for a plug? Okay, let's talk about some other things. And Brian's going to stick around for the fun. So just going around the dial, some odds and ends from the news. I'm just going to read off a few things we have on our list, and anyone can hop in with any sort of editorializing. The Celtics finished the 2021 season eighth, in terms of popular merchandise, and Jason Tatum's jersey was the fifth most widely sold. Any thoughts on that one? That feels like possibly that's a big deal.
Boost those MVP odds, baby.
Yeah. I mean, Tatum's star power is just going through the roof. And I think Team USA, we'll talk about the Olympics in just a second. I think he's about to be an international star, selling Subway and Ruffles and all sorts of stuff.
You don't have too much to add. I'm just surprised that the Celtics are actually eighth. That's pretty good.
Brian, are you a Pacific Northwest kind of guy?
I did go to college in the Pacific Northwest. I got my journalism degree at the University of Oregon, and my sister went to University of Oregon, and she lives in Oregon now still as well.
Do you see a lot of Celtics jerseys out that way, or do you think these are just people in New England buying multiple jerseys?
Well, I live in Brooklyn now. And I would say not a ton out here. And when I was in college, I can't think of really any examples of somebody wearing a Celtics jersey on campus. But you know, that Celtics green is pretty similar to the Oregon Ducks green, yeah. as Peyton Pritchard would know. So maybe the Pritchard jerseys are selling pretty well in Portland right now, in Eugene, because that's probably one of the NBA players who's getting the most minutes for us last year out of Oregon besides Dylan Brooks. So I think that that's a likely thing, you know, they have Pritchard jerseys.
Cool. I like that. I really like that, actually. Well, while we're speaking on about Portland, we're going to talk about the Damian Lillard situation in just a second. But Alex, you're premiering a new segment for the Celtics Lab podcast. Why don't you tell us what it is, and why don't you tell us about its first installment?
Sure. This is Alex's unfounded rumor of the week, and it's a new segment that I'm starting where I'm going to do what I usually do, which is spend way too much time on Twitter. But this time, I'm going to pull something from the depths of Twitter, a basketball rumor, preferably Celtics related, though maybe not if I can't find one, that makes absolutely no sense and is just demonstrably and obviously wrong, just to point out the recurring life lesson that I have learned, which is that you should not always trust what you see on Twitter, especially when it comes to basketball. And so, without further ado, the debut of Alex's unfounded rumor of the week is that the Celtics want to trade for Eric Bledsoe of the New Orleans Pelicans. So this is a rumor that I thought was related to the Athletic article suggesting that Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams were ripe to be dealt. But I read that article and I didn't see a single thing mentioning the Celtics at any point ever. And so I did a little digging and I found a site that I truly don't even remember by a journalist that I've never heard of and I'm not sure is accredited on any level, suggesting that the Celtics might be interested if Eric Bledsoe was to be made available. This is a trade that makes absolutely no sense. It's not going to help the Celtics with their point guard veteran depth problem because Eric Bledsoe is not very good. Eric Bledsoe is also very expensive. The only way that I could see this trade happening is if draft assets were attached and Eric Bledsoe was the pill that the Celtics had to swallow to get said draft assets, but I really am not betting on it. So that is your unfounded rumor of the week.
I actually do think that there is a very unlikely but reasonable reason to trade for him. And no, I know it's, but we should mention it because someone is going to be like, no. His 2023 contract only guaranteed for $3.9 million. So if they were looking to try to clear some books beyond the $16 million that Al Horford is owed, that could be a way to do it. But that, of course, means they're throwing the towel on the Al Horford experiment before it even begins, which I very strongly doubt.
And just anyone who's wondering, that wasn't Woj or Shams calling Alex to confirm that was a different phone call. All right. Well, while we're talking about trade rumors, and Brian, we'll get you in on this one. Justin, you ran an article on Celtics Wire with the whole kerfuffle around Dame Lillard's future in Boston. You wondered if a trade for Dame Lillard and centered around Dame Lillard and Jaylen Brown made any sense. You want to tell us what the readers thought of that one?
Sure. So every time I talk to anybody who follows basketball fairly closely, I got the same general response, which was, this is not a good idea. But there seemed to be like this really heavy narrative that this was a good idea and this was broadly supported. So I just decided to run a poll and see if it was. And sure enough, two-thirds of the fans who did respond strongly disliked the idea. There were some who were about a third, not quite a third, more like a quarter when she got rid of the I don't knows, not sure type people. Compelling, I know. there is a small contingent, maybe 15%, I think it was, something like that, who would be comfortable trading Jaylen for what it would cost to get Lillard on board, but it's very far from a majority.
So, Brian, earlier you said perhaps the Pelicans have the best package for Lillard. And for my money, it doesn't sound like he is on his way out, but it also doesn't sound like he is off limits. So if you were a betting man, where do you think Dame Lillard is playing for next spring?
Next spring? I would say because of the nature of his contract, the best money is still on Portland. I don't think that that's necessarily the situation that we should expect as fans. But I think it's more likely Portland than it is, you know, anywhere else. Now, if I could take the field, I would probably take the field. I think that that's probably the most likely scenario is he's somewhere that's not Portland. If the options are Portland or not Portland, That's kind of what I'd have to think. But, you know, he's got a long, long contract. He's got that extension that's about to kick in. So it's 4 years. So trading somebody that's under contract for that long, there's a lot less urgency. So I wouldn't be surprised if it had to be another year of him in Portland before a trade gets done. That being said, I think that Boston's got a decent offer, you know, for him if they were interested in Jaylen Brown. I think that Jaylen Brown would do much better in the Portland market in terms of fans liking him than, let's say, Michael Porter Jr. out of Denver would. I think that Jaylen fits what they're looking for out there a lot more from a fan perspective than Michael Porter Jr. And I do think Porter Jr. is an excellent player. But, you know, I think that Brown is somebody who I think would be adopted very fast as just the ideal player for that market. I think, yeah, I mentioned New Orleans. I think you have to keep an eye on Denver. I really, really like, you know, the idea of Damian Lillard and Nikola Jokic on the same team, especially with Jamal Murray set to miss all of next season, presumably with his torn ACL. It's hard for me to imagine seeing Jokic go from MVP to, you know, losing a star teammate like that. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Denver throw all their chips on the table.
Wow, interesting. And yet, to close the loop, this is off the top of the head, so these numbers are a little inaccurate, but I think Lillard is owed somewhere in the $230 million range over the next 4 years, and that's I think $27 million more than the next highest paid player, Giannis. So it is not an insignificant chunk of change to try to move around. All right, let's close out the news. Let's talk about the Olympics and let's get out of here. Danny Ainge hinted that he might want to work in a different front office somewhere, but maybe with limited responsibilities. So perhaps we'll see him sticking around the NBA. Tatum, in an interview with Gary Washburn, said that he was shocked that Danny Ainge had left and that he wasn't expecting Brad to get the promotion that he did, which I suppose is not surprising, but he was pretty forthright about that. And also, you might have seen Jaylen Brown on Jimmy Kimmel Live, where he raised 25 large for his Juice Foundation, playing a silly game with, I think, Anthony Anderson, which is kind of cool. So we have that put away. This is why you come for this podcast, I suppose. Let's talk about Summer League. Let's talk about the Olympics, and let's go home. So Summer League, it looks like we're going to get Pritchard, newly acquired Moses Brown, Neesmith, Carson Edwards, Jan Medeiros, maybe Taco Fall. And Alex, you were telling us that maybe Romeo Langford in a point guard position.
Yeah, so this is going back to an Athletic article from Jared Weiss that's suggesting that the Celtics are interested in exploring Romeo as a more ball-dominant point guard type player rather than in the wing role that he's kind of traditionally been used at in the few games that he has played with the Celtics. Of course, Romeo has missed a ton of time from injuries at the beginning of his career. But one thing that they were, according to this article, thinking about doing is empowering Romeo to be a little bit more of a playmaker off the bench, which I think is actually kind of an interesting move and one that maybe gets a little closer to his college skill set when he was at IU. I think it's not a crazy idea, especially given that the Celtics, in the same article, Weiss mentions that the Celtics are also potentially interested in exploring what Peyton Pritchard can do in a more off-ball role where he's kind of as a spot-up shooter, cutter type, which I think, given what we saw from Pritchard last year, he definitely has his limitations as a ball handler, but arguably the best thing that he brought to the table was a consistent outside threat. So I wouldn't be shocked to see them toy around with some funky lineups with Romeo at point, with Pritchard playing a kind of nominal two-guard role. I think that Summer League has traditionally been a place where Brad really likes to tinker with lineups and try out some funky, interesting stuff. And I would not be surprised if Udoka carries that over.
Sure. And perhaps Pritchard can play the two guard, which we don't know what will happen with Evan Fournier, so that could be an interesting wrinkle. Norm Powell a few hours ago opted out of his player option. Will Barton did the same a few days ago. So the market for a two guard will be intriguing, and that could affect Evan Fournier very much. In terms of summer league, it sounds like, speaking of our friend Jared Weiss, that Tremont Waters is on his way out. Good luck, Tremont, if that's true. And that the team has worked out Zach Augustine and the great Nigel Hayes. So that could be, those could be two names to keep an eye on. We'll talk more about summer league as it comes down the pipeline, but there are a lot of fun players. I think anyone who is more than a casual fan of the Celtics will have to tune in. And let's talk about the Olympics, which are still happening. What a treat to go sleep on those anti-sex cardboard beds to represent 20th century nationalism. What a wonderful journey that will be.
I have to say, if you really think that the most gifted physical athletes in the world cannot find a way to engage in extracurricular activity outside of the setting of bed, you really are like, I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. What are we doing here, Japan? This makes no sense.
Okay, Alex, tell us how you really feel. But yeah, I mean, it's preposterous, as are the number of COVID-related incidences that seem to be piling up outside of basketball, inside of basketball. Beal is out. Zach LaVine hasn't traveled to Tokyo yet. Jeremy Grant is now out. I mean, it's probably too big to fail, like Dr. Quinn has said a number of times, but something to keep an eye on. But let's add on the lighter side. Jason is looking okay in the game against Spain, the final scrimmage. He only had 6 points, but he did have 6 rebounds, 5 assists. That's some dynamic play from your future point forward. Brian, let's get you out of here on this. What American player are you most excited to watch? And then give us a prediction, if not the Americans, who wins gold in men's basketball?
I mean, I just love watching Kevin Durant play basketball.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where the more often, you know, you see somebody healthy, you know, or so see somebody unhealthy, rather, the more you appreciate them when they are healthy. So I hope that Kevin Durant can just be the guy that, you know, we know him to be, and take home gold for the United States. I think that's probably the most likely scenario. At this point, and I do think that I would, if I were a betting man, that's what I would definitely bet on here for sure. But you know, I think that otherwise you've got to take a look, you know, at Spain. Obviously, the returning World Cup champs. I think that they're always a team worth keeping an eye on in terms of you know, their basketball team, although they are. A much older version of Spain outside of Usman Garuba, who, you know, is obviously not their starter with the Gasols out there and everything. You know, Australia obviously is definitely worth watching as well. And of course, you know, France, but I think it's definitely US's to lose.
Or COVID's to win, I suppose. Just to really round things out, Keldon Johnson was the 29th overall pick just a few years ago in 2019, and now he's representing Team USA at the Olympics. So as much as I think we're all tuned into the first four picks of this coming up, this draft coming up, there's talent everywhere. So Brian, thank you so much for talking us through that. Brian Klobrowski writes for USA Today's Hoops Hype and For the Win. Can't thank you enough.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you on the behalf of Alex, on the behalf of Justin, on the behalf of our t-shirt giveaway, and the nice Celtics Live t-shirts you can buy anytime at your leisure. We'll see you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.